Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org Reality Cast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
It's a very blunt amendment-centric episode of Reality Cast. I'll be covering the now-dead amendment that was crafted to specifically deny women access to contraception through their insurance, both the way it really has been an albatross for Republicans and to congratulate those who stood up for women's rights. Also, Monica Potts will be on to discuss anti-feminist, anti-choice groups that pretend to be feminist. Jon Stewart dedicated an entire show to the Blunt Amendment, and what was really amusing was that he addressed the claims that this had nothing to do with contraception by referencing a letter that a conservative congressman introduced as a piece of evidence.
Which means you actually have to go to the Congressional Record to find out that this Not About Contraception letter states, quote, "Government contraceptive programs inevitably change the sex, dating, and marriage markets in ways that lead to more empty sex." And I'm pretty sure they meant that in a negative way.
Of course, before the week was out, the whole religious liberty argument had basically withered away as a bunch of right-wing pundits started yelling about dirty sluts. They could only keep their true arguments pent up for so long, you know. Well, the Blunt Amendment died a hasty death in the Senate after Senate Democrats forced the amendment's authors to try to defend it on the floor of the Senate, which was a fool's game. The amendment was a foolhardy attempt by conservative forces to make an issue out of the Obama administration requiring insurance companies to cover contraception fully for women. The Blunt Amendment would have allowed an employer to block access to any medication or procedure if he disapproved of it, meaning everything from vaccines to blood transfusions to insulin could be imperiled. The amendment died quickly enough, but it was around long enough to become a real thorn in the side of Republican presidential candidates who are beginning to realize they can't win as long as they're talking about contraception. If they come out against it, they threaten their standing with most of the public that supports these new regulations. If they come out for it, they threaten their standing with a suddenly radical anti-contraception base that is being fed a constant stream of misogynist blather from Rush Limbaugh. Romney's behavior reflects this conundrum. He was asked about the Blunt Amendment by a journalist in Ohio.
Blunt Rubio is being debated, I believe, later this week, that deals with banning or allowing employers to ban providing female contraception. Have you taken a position on that? He's said he was for that, and we'll talk about personhood in a second, but he's for that. Have you taken a position on that?
I'm not for the bill, but look, the idea of presidential candidates getting into questions about contraception within a relationship between a man and a woman, a husband and wife, I'm not going there.
This is a sound position that both reflects a rejection of the extremism of the bill and an understanding that one probably won't get far opposing a service that 99% of American women have used and over 60% of Americans believe should be offered to women without a copay. A sensible, reality-based position, the sort of thing that would be completely non-controversial in any year but this one. Unfortunately, Romney hung on to this sensible, reality-based position for about an hour before changing course.
Within the hour, Romney's press secretary began the Romney reversal, releasing this statement. Regarding the Blunt bill, the way the question was asked was wicked confusing. Governor Romney supports the Blunt bill because he believes in a conscience exemption in health care for religious institutions and people of faith.
It's telling that there's so much anti-contraception enthusiasm on the right now that Romney changed course that fast. He didn't even think about it. That's kind of alarming, especially when you consider that nearly 100% of the people who are clamoring to restrict access to contraception have used contraception themselves. This is probably surprising to outsiders, but those of us who have been doing this work for a while aren't surprised. After all, anti-choicers also avail themselves of the right to abortion. There's a tendency on the right to get so sucked into misogynist blather that they forget it has real-world effects, even on themselves. Anyway, Romney's excuse for this was special.
I didn't understand his question. Of course I support the Blunt Amendment. I thought he was talking about some state law that prevented people from getting contraceptions. I thought it was some Ohio legislation where employers were prevented from providing contraceptives. And so I talked about contraceptives and so forth. So I really misunderstood the question.
So he's against state restrictions on contraception, but all for federal ones? Okay. I'm unclear what's supposed to be the deep principle that's attached to, especially since conservatives have always hidden behind states' rights before. I love how transparent this is, especially since I can safely say that people who want the federal government to get in between women and their contraception would support states doing the same. Even Rick Santorum is beginning to feel oppressed by this conundrum, where the anti-choice beliefs demanded by the base are offensive to anyone outside the hard right. He just wants the whole thing to go away, and thus lost his temper on a radio host who asked him about it.
This is again the spin that the media will have. You get women are not a
problem. Yeah, but you did say it though, right? I mean, in all fairness, Rick Santorum, you did say that about birth control. So if you're on the trail and it's on video, it's here's a question I have because
All right, let's stop right here.
Okay.
What I talked about was my personal beliefs.
Right.
If we get in a country where you can't talk about your own personal beliefs, and somehow or another that we're not tolerant of other people's beliefs on a variety of different subjects, mm-hmm. then we are in where Barack Obama is.
Right.
Which is the government mandating that you have to believe what the government wants you to believe. And that's what the issue is in this election.
The phone then cut off, which caused the host to make cracks about how a candidate should, you know, have a phone that doesn't just dump him during adversarial interviews? The Blunt Amendment failed, so it's possible this controversy will fall away and spare these two candidates further suffering. But honestly, with Rush Limbaugh and other avid conservative pundits refusing to let go, this issue may not disappear that fast. I'd like to welcome Monica Potts to the program. Monica is a senior writer for the American Prospect. Monica recently published an article in the Prospect about anti-choice groups like Feminists for Life and the Susan B. Anthony List that purport to be feminists despite opposing women's reproductive rights. She's here today to talk about her piece and the anti-feminist feminism. Welcome to RealityCast, Monica.
Thank you for having me.
Most of your piece is really about the Susan B. Anthony List, since Feminists for Life tends to stick to college campus work and not so much electoral politics. Can you describe mm-hmm. the mission drift of the SBA List, sort of its history and how far it's gotten from its original goals?
Sure. In the beginning, it was the Susan B. Anthony List was founded by a group of women who really self-identified as feminists. Especially Rachel McNair, who is a Quaker pacifist from Missouri. And she and some of her friends from mostly from Feminists for Life were upset at Emily's Lists, which we all know as the group that helps raise money for and help elect pro-choice Democratic women, for purporting to represent all women. These women are self-identified feminists but also oppose abortion. And they wanted to found a group that worked like Emily's List to get money to women who opposed abortion but would enter the public sphere and enter politics at the national level so that they could have women who they felt represented their own views and issues better. Over time, what happened is that the group sort of lost its founders. They all kind of drifted away and were less experienced in electoral politics than the founding of a super PAC might indicate. They mostly had been involved in academia, and they all drifted back to academia mostly. And it was kind of taken over by women who were more ingrained within the Republican Party and worked inside the Beltway, including the group's current president, Marjorie Dannenfeldter, and the group's past president, who's still a member of the board, Jane Abraham, who is Spencer Abraham's wife. Spencer Abraham served in the Bush administration and is a former senator from Michigan. They were sort of more in tune with the Republican mission, and the group, instead of sort of working to elect all women from any party who opposed abortion but also wanted to work to empower women in different ways. They all have different sort of views that they identify as being, sorry, let me say that again. They all wanted to elect women from any party who would work to empower women, but just also happened to oppose abortion. Instead of that, the Susan B. Anthony list migrated into a group that mostly worked to elect only Republicans and would start to endorse men as opposed to just endorsing women. So that's sort of the broad scale drift of the group over time.
I really find the way that they've kind of shifted from being about of nominating or endorsing women to endorsing men to be kind of fascinating. Is it just that they have trouble finding female anti-choice candidates, or is there something else going on?
I don't think that they have trouble finding female anti-choice candidates. In fact, there are a few of them, and I think in the piece I mostly focus on Kathy Dahlkemper, who's from Erie, Pennsylvania. And Kathy Dahlkemper sort of perfectly represented the views of her district. She's Catholic. She's very pro-union. She's very traditionally Democrat in a lot of other ways. She's very much she wanted to champion the middle class, bring manufacturing jobs back to the country. But she also just happened to oppose abortion, so Emily's list didn't quite work for her. If the Susan B. Anthony list wanted to, it could find Kathy Dahlkempers around the country and really spend a lot of resources getting them into politics, getting them elected into Congress, and getting them to stay in Congress. And I do have to say here that, you know, the group still does endorse women around the country. It's still its purported mission to endorse women around the country. But I think what happened is that they started to see that they were going to have more success within Republican circles if they endorsed anyone who could gain a seat for the Republican Party. I think they wanted to hitch their wagon to that sort of bigger goal, and they would be able to raise more money that way than they would be able to raise money by just sort of finding a few women around the country who kind of fit that very narrow sort of spectrum of viewpoints. So that's pretty much it. I think it was about sort of becoming a big player as opposed to becoming a sort of very specific player, where they could have actually done they could have actually had a big influence by staying in that sort of realm.
I think it's kind of interesting because, you know, it's drifted in a much more rightward direction. But even despite that, Rachel McNair, who sees herself as a pacifist and I guess a liberal feminist, she founded SBA List. And you quoted her in the piece saying, abortion is something that is inflicted on women rather than something women should be allowed to do if they want. It's part of her larger argument that all women would, if left to their own devices, want to keep every pregnancy they have. And I just find this idea essentialist, paternalistic, and fundamentally incompatible with feminism. So even, you know, for women who, even though women who hold it claim to be feminists, what do you think? Do you think that that's why Susan B. Anthony is the way that it is?
I think for most of us, those would be conflicting views that are hard to sort of hold in one head. I think that women like Rachel McNair and Susan Gibbs, and also to some extent Kathy Dahlkemper, they sort of want to investigate. When we talk about the right to choose and the right to have reproductive choice, we talk a lot about that as a right, but we don't talk very much in the society for a number of reasons about the things that might lead women to choose abortion or not having an abortion, and they would argue that a lot of the reasons women choose to seek abortions have to do with some sort of subtle or overt economic coercion or coercion from their boyfriends, and they see or other partners, and they see really abortion as sort of the end of a line of abuse that women face by not really being They see it as sort of the end of a line of abuse that women face, in that motherhood is still really financially disastrous for women. Women face a gender pay gap that is largely attributed to their decisions to have children. If we look at the gender pay gap, it's largely a motherhood gap. And so they see sort of those things as a problem, and so abortion as being another sign of the problem. And these women sort of vary as far as their views on, as far as how extremely anti-abortion they are. Most of them most of the women involved in the founding, or many of the women involved in the founding of the Susan B. Anthony List, would support abortion rights in case of rape or incest. So, you know, that used to be, that's a less extreme position than a lot of Republicans now have. So I think that they see, they sort of want us to talk about the problems that women face in their pregnancies and the choices that they make. You know, I personally think that that is an interesting viewpoint that very few anti-abortion activists actually have. For the most part, anti-abortion activists look more like the Susan B. Anthony List now, and what they don't believe is that women have the right to be sexual beings outside of marriage, or have the right to control their lives in that way. And they also believe that becoming a mother is sort of the most important thing that women would do. So of course they would want to have any baby that they are expecting. So I think that you're right, that most of the reason the Susan B. Anthony List drifted that way is because the vast majority of anti-abortion activists would follow that philosophy, as opposed to anything that would sort of think about women as, you know, creatures that society abuses in any kind of way.
One of the things, Susan B. Anthony List has been on my radar a lot in the past year because they've been really aggressive in pushing the war on contraception. And they've been at the forefront of trying to strip federal subsidies for contraception and pushing the notion that female-controlled birth control is the same thing as abortion. So do you think that this is a new chapter in their organization? Do you think that they're really kind of going into an entirely different direction because of things like this?
I do think so. I think that in the lull between the midterms in 2010 and 2012, you know, we're really just sort of seeing the presidential race heat up. I think that they really saw the, you know, anti-Planned Parenthood thing as a wave that they could ride, and they started to attach themselves to senators in states around the country, and congresspeople in states around the country and on the national level, who wanted to defund Planned Parenthood, who wanted to attack the president's health care plan in every way possible, and one of those is in the contraception rules. And so I think that they definitely saw that as a way to gain even more power, is to sort of attach themselves to those movements. The Susan B. Anthony List, I also should say, sort of has two arms. It has an arm that can perform educational functions, which is how they would classify a lot of these anti-Planned Parenthood activities that they do and anti-contraception activities that they do, where they air commercials about how bad Obama's health care bill is for women. And then they have another arm that endorses candidates. And so that's how they're able to do sort of both things. They're a nonprofit and a super PAC.
My guest today has been Monica Potts, and you can read her article. It's titled Susan B. Anthony's Hit List. It's online and in print form in the latest edition of The American Prospect. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Monica.
Thanks so much for having me.
I've spent the past few weeks mainly chronicling the increasingly hysterical anti-contraception rhetoric on the right. It's been a useful exercise. Rush Limbaugh has been dropping sponsors faster than my cat sheds fur. But it's also a little wearying. So, because I'm taking next week off to attend South by Southwest, I'm going to leave you a note of hope and optimism. I'm going to play clips of people who had kicked butt during this entire situation, as a reminder that there are a lot of good people out there, men and women, who believe in women and believe in women's rights and are willing to fight for them. So, some shout-outs. Let's start with the venerable Senator Bernie Sanders.
This attack is grossly unfair, and I hope that men will stand with women in the fight to protect this very basic right. And let me add my strong belief that if the United States Senate had 83 women and 17 men rather than 83 men and 17 women, my strong guess is that a bill like this would never even make it to the floor.
While it is true that there are many idiotic women who oppose women's rights and many great guys like Senator Sanders who support them, he's not wrong to think that a full-blown panic over women having basic control over our reproductive systems would not really take off if women had more parity in leadership. Unfortunately, because of the way that women are systemically squeezed out of public discourse, I don't have many clips of female leaders speaking on this, but I do have a couple. Take Senator Maria Cantwell, who had some amusement about the fact that the anti-contraception Blunt Amendment was attached to a transportation bill.
But it seems as if the other side of the aisle, in all the discussions we've been having for the last year about jobs, about appropriations bills, about the debt ceiling, about moving forward on reconciliation, all come down to one thing. Let's get rid of reproductive health care for women. In February of last year, they introduced a bill, H.R. 1. They said, let's defund Planned Parenthood. Then later in April came a big moment of, are we going to move forward with a continuing resolution? And it was all brought to a halt until we could have a vote on defunding Planned Parenthood. And then we had another vote on it in the latest discussions about the payroll deal. There was discussions about whether a rider was going to be in there that cut women's reproductive health care access.
I could continue quoting, but literally, the number of attacks on women's access to basic reproductive health care have been so numerous that it would take too long to quote them all in one clip. So I'll leave it at that and ask you instead to check the links on the show notes for this page to watch her entire speech. Kristen Gillibrand, the senator from New York, also spoke out.
When will my colleagues understand this very non-debatable fact? That the decision of whether a woman takes one medicine or another, or what type of health care she should have access to, should not be the decision of her boss. A common sense, simple principle that bosses and employers should not make these very personal decisions. What could be more intrusive than that?
I just want to take a moment to remind everyone that the debate was over health insurance that belongs to women because they bought it with their own labor and money. This is no different than giving your boss control over your checking account. Senator Al Franken, as usual, was awesome on the subject of the Blunt Amendment.
This amendment would upend how our entire insurance system works. It would allow any employer to opt out of covering any health care service guaranteed by Americans by the Affordable Care Act. This is an unprecedented proposal, one that could change the structure of health care in our country, much for the worse.
Rush Limbaugh offered a non-apology to Sandra Fluke and the 99% of American women who use contraception that he called sluts and prostitutes. Non-apology because he stuck to his argument that women who use contraception are immoral and irresponsible. But he just said that he would have used different words. That is, he would have come up with better euphemisms. To her credit, Fluke didn't play along and pretend that this non-apology was anything but the nonsense that it is.
Well, let me just say this, and I encourage everyone to look at the statement in its entirety online. But what I have to say is that I don't think that a statement like this, issued saying that his choice of words was not the best, changes anything. And especially when that statement is issued, when he's under significant pressure from his sponsors who have begun to pull their support.
With all the hate and bile towards women pouring out as of late, it can sometimes be hard to remember there's a lot of decency and common sense out there. I hope that this segment can give you all some hope. Frankly, we shouldn't despair. As long as we continue to argue that women are people, that women deserve health care, and that there's nothing wrong with liking sex, we will win. We just have to keep fighting. And now for the Wisdom of Wingnuts. It's not just Rush Limbaugh edition. Bill O'Reilly was also echoing the claim that pregnancy prevention is not a legitimate use of health care.
The sense of entitlement I don't understand because I wasn't raised that way, all right? I don't understand the sense of entitlement. Like, okay, I have a social life. People. I have a social life, people. And I want you to pay for it.
Yes, I feel entitled to have my health insurance cover my health care. I know. I'm a woman, and therefore I'm supposed to give and give and not get anything in return as far as Bill O'Reilly is concerned. Well, that era is over. Women work hard and give of ourselves, and we deserve the right to basic health care, just like men.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for a weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.